We have time for some questions, and I've got a number of them here. They're really some good questions. I'm going to try to combine some of these, and we'll start here with these two. Is the decline of, this is for all members of the panel. We'll start, just kind of start here and go on down. Is the decline of the family related to a decline of masculinity? Question mark. To remedy the decline of the family, are there features of masculinity that must be revived? And I'm going to attach to that another question. A common policy in the mid-20th century was a family wage for fathers and husbands. This was implemented formally and culturally. Could this be a sexual counter-revolution policy?
Does it just go on?
Yeah.
Is it working? All right, good.
Yeah.
That's kind of magic. So yes, I mean, I think that that there is no way to get to a decent family regime or marriage regime among the lower stratas of American society without supporting the formation of manliness among the lower classes. There is, I would say, a combination of a lack of long-term view of what their lives are going to be like, combined with a decline in economic opportunity that would have to become like the characteristics of working class manliness. And what I would suggest has to be done is, and this, like, very few people are investigating this matter, and this is what Charles Murray's work kind of covers, and he documents the effects of this. But I, you know, to put it very pithily, I think we should work backwards from Archie Bunker and try to revive a kind of working class ethos. Now, I mean that kind of sarcastically, but at least he was married and was responsible enough to have one child and maintained a job. I think it's important to kind of work backwards from a decent working class life. And this is going to involve, I think, reach out efforts from churches, economic opportunities, because I think there can be no revitalization of the family among America's working class without revitalizing the family among America's working class. I should say the desires to establish families among America's working class men. And I think that's actually the most needful thing, and it's the thing that is least able to be talked about because we're aiming policies at, in this particular case, like the least important people in society from our ruling elite's point of view. So I think I would never stop talking about that issue if I were a conservative politician. Actually, these are your voters. And they've been ignored really for decades.
I meant to also just kind of give guidance here. Just try to keep our answers as short as we can so we can, no criticism intended here.
I have a short response.
But just so we get some more questions, make sure we get plenty. Yeah.
Right.
Tim's next.
Oh, well, no, I'm happy to defer.
Oh, okay. All right.
I thank the gentleman from Virginia. in your imagination, in their imagination and fantasy life, what kind of men do feminists find attractive? Just think about that. I think it answers the question about the importance of masculinity.
I'll keep it very short. Yes, no, and yes. Mm-hmm. But I will say anecdotally, Tom Wolfe wrote in the 1970s that there would come a moment where the American novel would be considered outdated because the reality of contemporary life will have become so absurd. I would give $1 million to have had the photo last night coming down to the Philadelphia Society dinner, three of us on one side of the elevator dressed for dinner, and three of us on the other side of the elevator in skirts going to dinner, from two different groups. And I think that this is a sort of a popular cultural, snapshot of the absolute need for this national conversation on masculinity and its foundational importance. So, yes.
This is strictly for Scott here. It's a question, first of all, actually two questions. You have addressed the anti-family ideology of feminists at the entire left, not just feminists. has adopted an anti-family ideology. Why single out the ladies here? And second, why so little emphasis on divorce?
Well, I mean, you want me to go on? I could go on and talk about divorce, and I do think that that's a thing, but I actually think it's a subordinate thing to feminism. Look, I mean, here's my simple answer to that. Feminism is among the two or three most powerful opinions governing America's education system and its culture. The image, and I mean this in a technical kind of term of art, of the independent woman is all over our advertising and movies. It's what's emphasized in the education system. Independent of the family is the technical, is the term of art that word means refer to. And but you cannot get to strong families from that opinion. Like, there is no way to do it. You can get to weak families, you can get to female-led families, you can get to no families, but you can't get to strong families from that position. And I think the necessity of politics has led to the accommodation of that position, and that is like no longer possible. So that position has to be something that that we aim our fire at, and the social ills that have followed from it, I think, are obvious and well cataloged.
I'll take one question from the floor. And again, we're doing questions. I remember in Philadelphia Society meetings in the past, this is often an opportunity for speeches, but questions.
There is something, I think, that societies used to have that they don't have today. And that's what I'd like you to respond to. And that is, unlike today, societies didn't tell you that you were living for yourself. You were living for something more. You were living for your religion, perhaps your community, your family, your lineage, your line. Nowadays, we've contracted it all, and it's all about self-realization. Is there any way of getting past that?
You have any particular person or okay? Any comments?
Well, it's really hard not to remind ourselves what you reminded us of in passing a moment ago, namely that God had a lot to do with that sense of selflessness and purpose which characterized earlier generations. If our straits are as dire as they seem, we might have to have recourse to a source as potent as we once had.
I do believe we are living in a time of very profound spiritual crisis, and I think that much of what we discussed today is related to the spiritual recession that has, flooded our country. And I think it's not tangential, but I think it's actually foundational, central to many of the questions that we've been talking about, and I think it's in a very specific way an answer to the great point that Steve raises.
You know, I had an interesting interview 3 weeks ago now with a noted feminist, Naomi Wolf. It's available on our website. It's really worth watching. She was an advisor to Al Gore and et cetera. She now is saying that our cultural crisis is so great that we need to reconsider God.
Yeah, he's an important guy. Okay, I have a question here from the audience. If families rather than individuals are to be considered the basic unit of society, should voting then be conducted as family units, not as individuals? Question mark. And let me addend to that an idea that has been kicked around and proposed, that children be given the vote, but that their parents exercise it for them through age 18. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a certain logic to the position. There is a logic to the position. In Milton Friedman's Capitalism and Freedom, he begins with individuals are the basic unit of societies or families. And then he goes on to write Capitalism and Freedom. And as if there's no big implication as to which one it is. And so I think, you know, under the old view, the family is a community and is recognized in law as a community. And that's, I think, the justification for the family having one vote. I don't think as any kind of political strategy in the short term with with marriage being in such bad shape that any kind of non-individualist or communal policy when it comes to recognizing the family would be workable. But as to what the principles demand, that's another question.
Other comments? Okay.
Who would want to touch that question?
one short comment that relates to the first panel this morning. The legislation that Lyndon Johnson brought in called Aid for Dependent Children has been the greatest enemy of the family that we have done. And then I have a question for all of you, which probably is going to offend people. Have we made, by law, divorce too easy?
Back to the divorce question.
Indeed. I'm thinking of Marianne Glendon's well-known book, 1988, Abortion and Divorce in Western Law. She pointed out that America has the loosest of laws of all advanced countries on both abortion and divorce. And it's a little surprising that we are even more nihilistic than our admired progressive European counterparts. So there's something in that.
Yeah, one of my hobbies is to look back at the actual debates that happened over some of these issues, like the pornography debate of the late 50s. What did each side think would happen if they won? And I've written a paper on the pornography question. No one really anticipated the current way divorce is run when the debates were going on in the early 70s. No one said women were going to file for 70% of the divorces. And they thought it was basically going to be men who filed for the divorces so they could run off with their secretaries. I mean, literally, that was the level of the debate. And so I think the way I would frame the divorce thing is that we've learned in the last 50 plus years some unintended consequences of the divorce regime, and we want to encourage more sober thinking before people undertake divorce. So we're going to change the default rules for who gets possession. Possession isn't the right word, but custody of child, possession of the child. And the custody will go by default to the male. And I think that would be a way of beginning to encourage the kind of thinking that would lead to fewer divorces. But I think the tricky thing here is that you don't want to make it so hard to get divorced that people will just say, I'm going to live together. And which is now an option, which wasn't really an option as much when the divorce debate was going on in the early 70s. So I think there is a kind of side door problem that you could have tighter divorce laws actually discourage marriage. And I think that's a real thing.
The only thing you omitted is that the father would then have to take responsibility for the child.
That's true, but I see it as a credible threat. The credible threat is the father will have to take responsibility for the child, and that's what encourages the second thoughts.
I have a question here from the audience, changing subject a little bit. There's a trend in the church, in churches, to downplay the significance of marriage, often in the name of empowering singles or making sure they don't feel bad. Does this perpetuate the decline of marriage? Question.
Yeah, I might pick up on this. At Focus on the Family, we have a 24/7 52 help center. Last year, one of the top 10, and these are very, very big numbers. Last year, I think in the top four or five complaints was people around the country who in an average year in their own parish or church hear not a single sermon or homily or sort of public forum within the church, not a single one on the issue of marriage and divorce. I think that for many of the reasons that we've discussed today, which become controversial among congregants or parishioners, there are, I think, and I think you could prove this empirically, actually, there are a very large percentage of pastors, priests, etc., who simply are wary of discussing these issues for fear of the backlash within their own congregations, unfortunately.
A short question.
Certainly. This question is for Graham. Your second, or one of your two themes was that we should not use government in order to promote traditional gender roles.
That's
and
right.
I guess my question is that even possible? What I mean by that is certainly no one wants to be heavy-handed. And you were talking about mandates largely, so
yeah,
maybe that's what you...
enforcement and coercion were the terms I was using.
Right. So my question is, surely there are any number of policies that bear on nudging people towards or away from traditional gender roles, how the tax code is formulated, what mm-hmm. pronouns appear on forms, how
Absolutely.
Easy is it to get a divorce. Surely we should not blind ourselves to which way those will push. Would you disagree or agree with that?
Oh, I totally agree with you, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, there are ways in which a state authority can take a position that is not coercive, but nevertheless takes a position. For example, switching to another subject, originally the American solution on religion was that we did not have religious neutrality, but we had religious liberty. That got transmuted in the 60s and 70s into we have to have both religious neutrality and religious liberty. But the original combination was better.
I have been commanded by higher authority to bring this session to an end. So let us thank our speakers and respondents.
Thanks. It was fun.
Really, really